Okay, so yeah, we figured that since probably I have the most elementary stuff to tell you, that maybe I should start. Oh, just okay. What I want to talk about is, and I apologize to those who have listened already to the talk I gave here at the beginning, because I used some of the slides. The good old strong field approximation, which is simple and I think basically is the backbone of understanding in this field, because you see what you write down and you see what it means, and then you can of course check whether or not it agrees with the data or with solutions of the Schrödinger equation. And so what I want to show you is some comparison of the strong field approximation with the solutions of the Schrödinger equation. Oh yeah. So this is in collaboration with Dieter Bauer in Heidelberg, Dejan Milosevic, who was here, and Gerhard Paulus from Texas A&M.
Just to be sure, I know exactly what you mean. When you say strong field approximation, you mean like Volkov
physics? Yeah, I'll show you actually. Okay, so for most of the time I will talk about what we call direct electrons. Those are electrons that after ionization do not interact with the ionic core anymore. And the formula, do we have a pointer here?
It should be, I think it ran out of juice yesterday.
Oh, just in good old here, this one will do fine. Okay, so it's the matrix element. We start from the field-free ground state. And then here you can either write the binding potential or the interaction with the field. Doesn't make any difference. I mean, one form can be turned into the other by integrating by parts. And then we project on the Volkov state. I just reproduce the Volkov state here.
So with the ionization process, yes?
Yeah, for ionization. And for the case, I'll show the other one in a minute, where the electron, after it got out, has no interaction with the ionic core anymore. And again, for intuition, it's very, I mean, you can evaluate this exactly, but it's a lot nicer to evaluate it, provided the field is strong enough, by stationary phase. And for that, we look at the fast dependence of the exponent here on the time. So this term here we consider as slow. And the fast time dependence then is in this integral, and also in the exponential e to the I binding energy times t of the initial state. And if we look for the stationary points, they are determined by this condition here. And you see that both terms here are positive, so the solutions t for which we are looking will invariably be complex. And you get several, and so then what you get as a final result is a sum here over all the solutions of these saddle point equation. And the individual contributions have the action here at taken at the saddle point. And then what's left here is the matrix element of the binding potential between the initial ground state and this plane wave here. P is a drift momentum at the detector, and this here is a vector potential at the time when the electron was ionized. Okay.
So and can yeah. Ask for it's the same what Kjell the short example.
Yeah. It's age old and time honored and everything. And okay.
Except you use the.
It's Kjellish. It's a length gauge. Here, otherwise this term would be absent. And okay, the binding potential, and this is, I mean, the core, one of the cores of the shortcoming of the strong field approximation, you see that all of this here does not depend on the binding potential. The only point where the binding potential enters is right here. I mean, this here is the ground state in the binding potential, and this here is the binding potential itself. And this here, we call this a form factor. So essentially, it's the Fourier transform of the binding potential times the initial wave function. And going back again to here, the stationary phase solution. If the intensity is high enough, you may just ignore here the binding potential, and then of course the
solution. Sorry. Yeah. What does it mean?
Well, I would for that question in detail.
Yes, about 10 electron volts. So with 10 volts and 10
electron. Basically, I mean, if the Cavendish parameter is in the puts you into the tunneling regime. I mean, the stationary phase approximation is incredibly good, and it still gives quite good answers.
Yeah.
Even if you wouldn't expect it. I mean, if you and then actually you can just take this condition here. This is kind of the classical limit, and everybody. I mean, this is the core of essentially utter second physics, because this is it tells you that the drift momentum, the momentum at the detector, is given by the vector potential at the time of birth, and so this by and large determines the saddle point. Okay, so then all in all, you get an expansion of the ionization amplitude like this here, in terms of these, we call these quantum orbits, and these are just orbits of a free electron in the laser field that start from the position of the atom at the complex time TS. They're given down here, but I'm afraid you cannot see it, and I don't know how to raise it up. So
I mean, such an order is.
Just raise the screen.
Oh, I can scroll it up?
No.
It's not the... No, Tony, that won't work. No, it's the... Okay, so... Anyhow, so here it just is an orbit of an electron in a laser field, and at the complex time, the orbit starts at the origin. Now, of course, it's a real orbit, so if you really start the orbit at the real part of the saddle point solution, then it will start away from the origin. This comes out automatically. So here you see some examples. Okay, what's plotted here is a few cycle pulse. This here is the electric field of the laser pulse. And we specified the energy at the detector. And then we can solve the saddle point equation and find here, for example, here is one start time and here is one start time. What's plotted here on this axis is the position of the orbit parallel to the linearly polarized laser field. So you see one, I mean, starts here and, okay, it does not start at the origin because of this. It basically starts at what would be the exit of the tunnel in the tunneling picture. Yeah?
How do you define these real starting times? I mean, I understood that complex start time means that there's no real start time.
Well, but you have a real part of the...
Yeah.
So, I mean, we did...
The real part.
Here. So this is a real part of this complex time, and it then automatically does not start at the origin, but in this case, here about one half atomic unit away from the origin at what would be the exit of the tunnel. So in this picture here, here is the binding potential, and this is the interaction with the field, and here is the binding energy. Then here at this point, this is what I call the exit of the tunnel, and this is where the electron orbit would start, and this corresponds to this position here. And then for the same momentum,
these simulations are for delta function?
No, this is, I mean, the strong field approximation in a way is a delta function potential in disguise, because I showed you that where the saddle point this result holds for any potential, and but the saddle point equation does not depend on the potential. So it's basically what you would get for zero range potential. The potential only enters here. So there are no bound states. And okay, for the same momentum, we have an orbit that starts here. And okay, after that, I mean, this would repeat itself periodically if we had a long monochromatic pulse. Here we have a few cycle pulse, so this here is slightly different, but and these go in the other directions, and here then you would have another pair of solutions that would go in this direction. Okay, the important point is this here. I mean, these orbits here start at the same magnitude of the electric field, at the same value of the electric field, And but this one here returns to the origin before it moves away towards the detector. This one here doesn't. So we will expect that this orbit here, in reality, has a strong interaction with the Coulomb field, while this one doesn't. And this strong interaction with the Coulomb field is not accounted for by the strong field approximation. And this is, I think, the basic point, the basic weakness of the strong field approximation.
Way to see why you start with a non-zero velocity. I thought usually right after tunneling.
Classically.
Well, usually you would start with zero velocity.
Well, the velocity is low. I mean, classically you do. Quantum mechanically, I mean, the you have some. Actually, quantum mechanically, you start with an imaginary velocity, if you want so. So.
You mean you start actually under the barrier where the velocity is imaginary?
Well, I mean the if you want to have a velocity, I mean you okay. Actually, you see it again from this condition here, right here. I mean this here is the square of the velocity at the start time, and you see, I mean it's negative. Okay, so the velocity at the start time is non-zero and imaginary.
Well, that's the stationary phase point. I guess calling that the start.
Yeah, but that's the start time, and so then you can take the real time or something.
That's those words. I'm not sure. Correspond to the physics. Stationary phase point seems completely. It's a mathematical entity.
Yeah.
Different than.
But still, I mean, as long as the imaginary parts are small enough. I mean, you see here, if you allow yourself to ignore the binding potential, then it says exactly what you were saying. That the velocity at the start time is zero. Okay, and so by quantum corrections, this is modified a bit. I'm not sure if you can go further in a physical interpretation.
Why is the velocity zero? Time is not only it's in the middle of the pulse.
But here, I mean, what? Okay, ignore the binding potential.
Yeah.
Okay, and then here you have m over 2 v squared, p minus ea squared.
Yeah.
And so this is zero at the exit of the tunnel. I mean, at this point here, when all the energy is potential energy and there's no kinetic energy.
Given I have another question on on the next one.
So there is no interpretation of this
phenomenon.
So the next.
Now
the drawing. Well, I'm confused with this diagram. This represents the field.
Yeah.
The potential or the vector potential, the field.
The field. The electric field.
And this is the drift. The electron.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, this is okay. What's plotted here is the position along the laser field polarization. So they both basically go off in parallel.
Well, but
they will have the.
I'm confused. I always thought that the time when in a 1D model, the time when the electron crosses the origin again.
Yeah.
It's there.
Right here. I mean, this is zero.
It's when there is an intersection between the oscillation of the electrons.
You are thinking now of a different picture.
Ah, okay.
I mean, here this is just time, ionization time, and here I plotted the position of the electron. So the zero position, the ion sits right here at the origin. Okay, so here, I mean, this one kind of hangs around for a while, and then finally, I come back
to this picture,
okay, in a very little while.
Some qualitative interpretation of this?
No, this is calculated, really. I mean, this is calculated from the quantum orbit.
But you calculated, you said already, that you calculated only the velocity and coordinates, it was imaging, and then you take
the
new part of
something. Yeah, I mean, this here is, okay.
Two trajectories because you have two poles.
Two trajectories because you have two different starting times, and both have been calculated for a specified momentum at the detector. So you see already here that here they are, I mean, the direction is very close to each other. So they are slightly displaced in time, because they didn't get out at the same time, but they will move ultimately outside of the field exactly in the same direction.
Maybe all people know it, but the steps of what for?
I
integrated some adiabatic, so some exponential integrals. Mm-hmm. And so in this case, I have some little point that might be called.
Yes.
And then
yeah.
Additionally give you this picture which you show us?
Right here. Can you, but you cannot see it, I'm afraid. Here, this equation here, I mean, this gives the position as a function of time, and it starts at the solution of the saddle point. Solution, okay, so at t equal to ts, I mean, the right-hand side is zero, except that ts is complex. So the real-time t will never be equal to ts, so that's, okay, I mean, this complex. And then this here is just the integral of the vector potential, second integral of the electric field. So it's a free electron in the field.
But you look for the integral along the line as complex vector.
No, it's just, I mean, the only, I mean, the, we have a free electron. The only parameter that you need here to specify the orbit is the momentum outside the field, which is given, and the start time. And so the start time is determined by the saddle point.
Those are two different times, solution. The prime and the unprimed are two different times?
Oh, I'm sorry, I mean, this, I come to this. This here is for rescattering. So for the simple case, I mean, without direct electrons, no rescattering, the lower equation here is the right one. And, yeah?
One question to the picture here.
Yeah.
Why are the electrons not coming out when the field is maximal?
Oh, because if the field is
maximal, it would have a drift momentum of zero.
Yeah,
it's larger. Yeah, but I mean we want to have a spectrum. So what we do is we prescribe.
You have fixed the energy, right?
Yeah, right. Okay, yeah. We prescribe the momentum at the detector, and then the formalism will tell us when the electron has to come out. And you can also find out the probability. And if the momentum is high, the probability will be very low. Okay, this is just briefly, I mean, if we include rescattering, then we have a second term here. And I only show this because the spectra that I'm going to show you next will also have rescattered electrons. So here, in this term here, I mean, the electron is allowed to return to the binding potential, this green V here, which is hardly visible, and rescatter and only then go into the final state. Okay, so then what you get out of this is something like here. This here is a comparison now of strong field approximation, which is the dotted curves here, and the solution of the time-dependent Schrödinger equation in three dimensions. And it's a few-cycle pulse. So this here is what you observe at the right detector, I mean in one direction, parallel to the field, and this is what you observe at the opposite detector. Okay, now first, I mean the agreement here between the strong field approximation and the solution of the Schrödinger equation is incredibly good in the rescattering regime. These here are rescattered electrons, and you see they are some four orders of magnitude here below the direct electrons. So here the strong field approximation works to me incredibly well. This is at one detector and also at the other one. We adjusted one parameter here.
I will clarify that it works incredibly well at the high energy.
Yeah, you are right. Well, here, I mean, we have already...
We indicated that at the beginning of the study, creating the potential in the first order is...
Here already, I mean, we have these blue dots here indicate essentially you can also have rescattered electrons with a low energy, and they would basically follow this line. So the whole, then the Schrödinger equation adds everything. I mean, the discriminating between direct electrons and rescattered electrons is a theoretical concept. And in reality, you have electrons. And the Schrödinger equation gives you electrons, and this is just sort of theoretical. But in this formalism, here you would have rescattered electrons, but there are some four or more orders of magnitude between those. And,
is there an overall scale in this?
We adjusted one parameter here, but for both the sides.
The same?
Yeah. And also, I mean here, okay, for low energies...
What is the parameter you have adjusted?
It's TESA, I think. Is it this TESA? Yeah. No, it's not TESA. Well, it's this is the frequency. Binding energy is of hydrogen, and we have a four-cycle sine pulse. So the electric field has a sine shape with respect to the maximum of the envelope. The envelope is sine squared, and for a sine pulse, you have maximal asymmetry of the low energy electrons. Let's focus for just a minute on the low energy electrons here. And again, here of course there is no good agreement, but I mean here basically you don't expect it, because for these very low electrons, I mean, neglecting the Coulomb potential just is very bad.
This omega is tie subfield.
Let's see, is it tie? What is?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is.
But
yeah.
E0 of the hydrogen is
E0 not 0.834.
It's
not
hydrogen.
It's argon or something like this.
Yeah, okay, I'm noticing that right now.
I mean, it's helium.
It's helium, yeah. So why is it? Okay,
so it's helium.
Sorry.
Not exactly.
Yeah, this is a clear clear contradiction.
So
I cannot.
Does it mean, it's the next question. Does it mean that you have particular large intensities?
This is a field. That's a field amplitude. Uh-huh. So it's a strong field. It's hydrogen, and this is a field amplitude.
Which you show it's more than 10 to 15.
Yes.
10 to the 15.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
In this case, I see. Yeah. It's not possible. Ionization will be very strong.
Yeah, but it's a four-cycle pulse.
Yes.
So basically, I mean,
it is the best conditions. It is the maximum fields which you show us already.
No, this is a peak field. This is a peak field amplitude.
Yes. For example, if you have less, it will be the same good. You show us the picture which is best.
No, we didn't do a systematic comparison. I mean, this value came from somewhere, and I mean, if you reduce it.
Because
then,
the number is very specific. Something like really 0.84.
I mean, we didn't do a systematic comparison, and actually the situation, to me at least, maybe because of my ignorance, is confusing. Because, I mean, there are, for example, there are several papers by Burgdorfer and Wickenhauser, and in their case the agreement between the SFA and the strong field approximation is even better, in particular at low energies. I mean, in their paper, if I remember it right, even the peak positions agree at low energies. I recall some other papers where the agreement is worse. So, I don't know. It seems to be complicated. Another point I would like to point out is that the ratio between the plateau and the low energy plateau, again, is fairly well reproduced by the strong field approximation, which again we found surprising. And maybe the most interesting problem area is, to me, this area in the middle. So I mean 2UP, the cutoff of low energy electrons is about here, and the plateau starts at about 4 or 5UP here. In between, we have an area which is kind of difficult in conceptually, because the classical picture predicts there are no direct electrons with energies above 2UP. And the Riscata plateau is around here, and it extends up to 10UP. So here in between, we don't really have any simple classical mechanism that generates these electrons. We do have Riscata electrons here, and they are about here, but the direct electrons, which are allowed because of quantum mechanics doesn't obey these cutoffs, are much stronger than the classically allowed rescattered electrons. And so you see here that the SFA gives some interference here. These are interference minima between the two possible starting times that you have within one cycle of the field. And the quantum mechanics basically smooths over those. Okay, the next point, I'm taking too much time, I'm afraid, here. So let me just... we wanted to make sure that these interferences are not an artifact of the strong field approximation. So what we did was to cut the Coulomb potential at two atomic units down to zero. So basically we had a short range potential then, and then, lo and behold, of course quantum mechanics also shows these interferences here. So then we had perfect agreement between strong field approximation and quantum mechanics. So these interferences are not an artifact of the strong field approximation, they are really an interference effect. And so then you would expect to see them in experiments for negatively charged ions, like F minus here. This here, these are F minus data taken by Igor Kigan and Hans-Peter Helm in Freiburg. And this is our fit, and you see here, there is surely a dip here in the experimental spectra, which is basically at the position where the theory predicts this destructive interference. Of course, I mean, we took here some liberties with the intensities. The intensity for the data is 1.1 times 10 to the 13, and we obtained the best fit with 1.3. Tony and his group also have a fit of these data, which pretty much looks like this, I guess. And you also allowed...
We match the experiment somewhat better at that region.
In this region here, yeah. Well, you also had a slightly higher intensity, right, than the data.
Experimentally, it's difficult to determine what is the intensity.
Yeah. You know,
this paper, I think, explaining the effect. And so, as you did, chose the intensity that gave the best fit.
I mean, it's basically a time-honored tradition in strong field theory, but as a theorist, you can allow yourself some freedom in...
up to no more than a factor of two.
I think
we had 50%.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I should stop, actually. I mean, what I meant to show you was this very nice utter second double slit experiment. And also here, when you compare the data with the theory, this here is the strong field approximation, and this here is a solution by Dieter Bauer of the time-dependent Schrödinger equation. These two pictures are at one detector and at the opposite detector. This one here needs to be compared with theory. And you see at a glance that the strong field approximation reproduces many features, but certainly there is no quantitative agreement, while the agreement with the TDSE is quite good. So the bottom line is this, that the Coulomb field is important for any quantitative comparison, and actually, I mean, this is both a curse and a benefit, because if you turn things around, analyzing...
Here
is the absolute phase,
it's phase.
This is the energy, and the these plots is in one direction along the detector, Pauler stereo detector, you know. And I mean, of course, on the other hand, analysis of such data would allow you to learn something. I don't know what, unfortunately, but in principle, of course, it allows you to learn something about the atom, which is good. I want to show you
one more thing.
That was the main point I wanted to show you. These are data of this asymmetry coefficient. You have this stereo setup. You compare electrons going right and electrons going left, in this case regardless of energy. So here what's plotted here is the difference of electrons going left minus electrons going right, divided by the total number. This here is the strong field approximation, and in that case you have symmetry for a cosine pulse. And this is what is calculated by Schepan and Andri, and you see that the symmetry point has moved by a characteristic shift of about pi over 3. This here is the absolute phase, which I had on a previous right here. Okay, so this is the vector potential, and phi equal to 0 has a sine vector potential, so a cosine electric field. And this is what I would stir with, like to show you, is our explanation of the origin of the symmetry. And so what's plotted here is the carrier wave vector potential. We are interested in comparing electrons with a positive and negative momentum, but equal in magnitude. So we would have to intersect, by the rule that I showed you, P equal E times A, we have to intersect the vector potential with the horizontal line at momentum P or minus P. We get two solutions here, this time here and this time. The electric field at both times is equal. So the instantaneous ionization rate would be equal as well. And both go in the same direction. However, now what's plotted here is the electron orbits that start at this time and at that time. And you see again the difference that I showed already, that the electron that ionizes first will still be accelerated by the electric field, always with the same time up to here. So this goes this way right away, never sees the ion again. The electron that comes out later will ultimately have the opposite drift momentum. Okay, and but first still the field is negative, so it first goes in this direction. But then here the field goes to zero, so the electron turns around, moves towards the opposite detector, and at that time interacts strongly with the field, with the ion. And this is responsible for the asymmetry. Now the fact, the question is, what is the effect of this interaction? And will it basically enhance or reduce the contribution of this orbit? And our conclusion was it will enhance it, because this is a three-dimensional situation. So electrons that do not go exactly along the field direction will be refocused. And so this orbit here will carry a stronger weight. And this is the reason of why the symmetry point will move. And if we want to have backward-forward symmetry, we have to weaken the contribution of this orbit, and that we do by moving the carrier wave with respect to the envelope. So originally for perfect this here is would be the envelope that would give equal weight to these two orbits, and if we move the envelope over here, then the field at this point here will be weaker, and so then this orbit will carry a lower weight and we will restore symmetry. And I can assure you that the sign comes out right here. I'm not able to reproduce the argument, but we checked it very carefully, and this gives a minus sign here in this shift of the amplitude. And at this point I should definitely stop. I meant to show you something else. And because there was so much talk about correlations in the final state, we have plenty of data that introduce such a correlation by a 2-electron Volkoff state for double ionization. And if anyone is interested, I'll be happy to show that. Thank you.
Maybe the question again, because I cannot understand why you have so nice agreement. People around said that approach this quasi-classical approach, it is a straight line approach. Yes, it will not take into account the spread of.
On the spreading is accounted for. It's three-dimensional.
Already.
Yeah.
You think,
I mean, it's all. Everything is three-dimensional.
Yes. What is the magnitude lower?
Mm-hmm.
Because by the time you rescatter, you have a lot of spread.
I mean, what we found is that really, I mean, the dimension is absolutely critical. So, I mean, if you want to compare.
You think that, for example, I saw several people write like the next, they took classical wave particles, for example, they have many particles with initial C0 as you saw. So you take C0, then you take, for example, Fourier transform, so you have momentum distribution. And then they started from this momentum distribution, free particles, return, some generation harmonics. So you say it's correct? What's finally? Because many papers say it is quite simple for simple computers, because three-dimensional numerics, it's not so.
The other numerics is complicated.
Yes.
For the strong field approximation.
But you said that with a strong dimensions. Field approximation,
yeah.
a quasi-classical approach is very good.
Yeah.
Okay. So if they do the way I said, it is correct, yes. Many aspects. It's simple.
I mean, for what they say.
My card you just showed was obtained not with you, with your approach, but with exactly this one. Mm-hmm. That after tunneling, I launched many trajectories and did this card you just showed.
So they didn't estimate any complex T. They only take initial function, take Fourier transform to have distribution of value. So really they say that initial point, burning point, is zero exactly. And then the selectors moving with
right. I mean, don't forget, don't miss the point. The key point Miller made is that if you want this plateau,
yes,
you have to insert a second a correction to the strong field approximation that includes one rescattering, at least one rescattering with the core. Without that, you don't get this plateau. And what we found, as I mentioned earlier, is that right where the plateau begins, you really have to go to infinite order in the interaction because to get converged results. But at the outer end, the Quarkin model works very well. One rescattering gives you the end.
Just coming back to the recollision with the core in the preceding slide. The strong interaction, Coulomb interaction with iron.
Yeah.
So the change of phase is just the dwell time when you have a scattering by a potential well, by the Coulomb potential well. That's a phase shift induced by the
This is one of the effects. But there's more to it because you also have Coulomb refocusing.
No, well, I mean, when you scatter an electron from a Coulomb field, you change its phase. And there is some dwell time within the field, within the potential.
What you're saying is correct for a single trajectory, so to speak, but he's saying that you get additional trajectories that undergo the scattering because of the Coulomb.
In the forward direction. So, I mean, if here is your ion, so, okay, electrons turn out and turn around, and now you have these orbits here that, in principle, would pass the ion. But because of the Coulomb interaction here, they will go in the forward direction. So this is our argument, essentially,
that
you collect more.
Why forward? They're just scattered.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, they are attracted, so I mean...
But the Coulomb...
Compared to the left.
They can go also the other way. I don't like this refocusing idea. That's not the refocusing which makes the electrons go parallel to the...
Don't you really mean that the ones that bend down spend...
Because Coulomb would take into account only recombination process, yes?
Okay. The upper trajectory is diverging much more rapidly.
Yeah.
So the bottom one essentially feels the potential a lot more than the upper one. It's not a question of the angle. It's the direction.
Also the angle.
It's scattering.
I mean, the effect...
You cannot tell that the electrons go forward.
No.
The Coulomb. On the contrary.
What you are saying is this one here. Suppose, I mean, this here is the attractive potential. An electron is coming on this way here, okay?
Yes,
and
sure.
Now it would
it's elastic scattering.
Consider now the no scattering. The electron moves right over the potential, so then here, at this point, it will be very fast.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like when you drive on your bike through a ditch.
Yeah. Yes.
And so then in the end, at the other side of the potential, the electron will be arrive earlier than it would have otherwise without the ditch. Yeah, but still, it's faster. I mean, just
because it is
the conservative.
When it goes up,
it goes down.
It's quicker. I mean, a ditch helps you.
Okay, we should stop.
Okay. So, who's next?
Stefan.
We split into 15-15.
Yeah.
I still have a question. It's me. Can I ask another question or it's finished?
Who has this room?
Right.
Yeah. One question.
if in your calculations you wouldn't start from the ground state, but would start from some excited state or even maybe a Rydberg state, would the strong field approximation work better? Basically, the barrier will be much smaller. You'll be much more classical. The
response essentially just to a lower binding energy, and so what puts you even more into the
tunnel energy. So it would be better.
So it should be better, I guess.
Did anybody do such calculations?
Sure.
Did anybody?
Probably.
Okay.
But I just don't know how to do it.
F6 or F7
or F5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something happened.
It's coming. It's there.
So originally, my research related to this topic was not motivated at all by Coulomb. Coulomb herself was very interested in asymmetries in photoelectron angular distribution for the case of very short pulses or two-color pulses. So already, given introduces this asymmetric parameter which I'm interested in. And most part I never calculated spectra, I just calculated using time-dependent Schrödinger equation number probability how many electrons go to either one direction. This is laser propagation, it is laser polarization. And usually restricted to some small angle, not exactly zero like Wilhelm, but to avoid some errors, exactly zero, I allowed the detector here, and the detector here measure angles from 0 to 15 degrees. And most part is time-dependent Schrödinger equation calculation for this parameter. Now, I recall you that for one color long pulse, monochromatic pulses for atoms, we expect no asymmetry because of some simple rule, quantum rules. For example, one photon is absorbed, then one s goes to 2p, and square of 2p harmonic is exactly gives you the same. All angular distribution must be symmetric for one monochromatic pulse. So first we studied two color pulses, but I will present you exactly same case of same pulses. The asymmetry appears also very short pulses, just few cycle pulses shown here. This is my definition of phase zero, where maximum envelope coincide with the past. So this is just the definition of my career number of times. Earlier it was called absolute. So I will show that this kind of model is very bad answer, but it works, of course, where gamma is smaller than 1, but in transition where gamma is Cardis Pajolini is 1, this asymmetry is very badly reproduced, as you will see by tunneling models. You must add somehow Coulomb. So these are my points. Of course, for longer 10 cycle pulses, there is no this asymmetry disappears, as you will see. So here are just our references to our earlier work. So here I'm very briefly, because it's already Wilhelm explained the symmetry case. The simplest case is phase, absolute phase zero, and there is perfect symmetric here is time, it's symmetric situation. The same probability of tunneling from here and from here, and from here, final electron velocity is same, but goes to opposite direction. So there's perfect symmetry here, and really no asymmetry is expected. Although, intuitively first, one has seen that when pulse is so strong tunnels to this direction, so first intuitively I must say more electrons will go to this direction. If electric field is like this, electron is negative, tunnels to here. So one should expect in this direction more electrons, but this analysis, which already Wilhelm presented, shows that tunneling models is a bit already counterintuitive. But the situation is worse. It's quite opposite. Real calculations say that not to this direction, but asymmetry. This more electrons go to this direction, which are so it's a bit counterintuitive. But I don't know whether any question. They think this is very important. This point to understand to compare always to this that here this drift velocity has this property. It's essential that this electron continue without seeing the core, but this electron will see the core. That's the essence of the problem here. So right after tunneling. Electron, here just some classical image. Here is electric field as derivative of potential, and in standard model, which Corcom likes so much, never this part is included. So this I will present, we already saw picture we have presented, which exactly where my kind of Monte Carlo classical calculation based on inclusion on the plane this term classically. But if this term doesn't exist, of course final velocity of electron is this.
What does it mean, this term?
Pardon?
The last term, what does it mean?
The derivative of the potential.
Derivative of the Coulomb potential. Is it just Coulomb force? Is the Coulomb force?
Yes.
Is the which usually in standard tunneling Keldysh model is never included.
Okay.
But I will present the simulation later of this.
Sometimes.
So here, here was just. No, certainly I don't have time to describe details, but I use standard method for solving for hydrogen atom time-dependent Schrödinger equation with spherical symmetry. But what is maybe special in my calculation, how I calculate angular distributions. I use also electric field defined, I use E dot Ehrgeiz, but I use electric field defined as a derivative from this. This is an important detail for short pulses, I think already mentioned by Professor Onana. But maybe one special technique I'm using that I calculate simply quantum current during my calculation and integrate it over time, also over this small angle, 15 degrees. So I calculate through the sphere coming quantum current, then I get probability at giving theta or really this means probability flowing through this cone. Through this cone. So the same to right and the same to the left, and this is most practical. I don't need to use very huge grids here. It's about a few hundred bore, already I forgot, but probably something like this. And so I must just wait that everything passes through it. That's it. And I got this coefficient from time dependent Schrödinger equation. So here it's this. Maybe I will go back because simply is here not too much stuff on here. Here is just for, I did for hydrogen, but for helium atom as well with frozen core. And here is this asymmetric coefficient as function of intensity. And the really interesting strong asymmetry occurs right below the, well, where can this parameter is around one. Here really prediction of Kurdish model works, that there is practically no asymmetry here. But you just lower a bit intensity and appears more electron in positive direction, positive winds from, if you remember its previous picture of my tunneling, it means that really more electrons go to this direction. And because they probably because they are focused as William explained, and they had an occasion to meet the core and were focused by the core, and even attracted by the core. Second, it's possible that this electron can be also captured to some Rydberg cell and half cycle ionized also directly. There are very very many possibilities, but main is probably focused. So I don't discuss other phase in here. Here it's just more, here's for hydrogen, but there are more cases. Just discuss a bit this focusing effect, that when I take larger angle, asymmetry is a bit less. It indicates that really. But however, even if I integrate over all angles, still asymmetry remains. The lower curves are for higher, for complete integration over all angles.
By the way, can you say what part of electrons at home, for example, the whole part of electrons is units. So 10% in angle, yeah. Less 15 degrees.
Yeah, you can reduce from this coefficient, because it's one total resistance. This number means 0.5. I think that if, one can recalculate the maximum, if all go to one direction, it's one. So I don't have immediate answer, I can conclude. It's asymmetric coefficient. So you should compare to one, but it's about two electron more, about factor two more to one direction than another direction.
Excuse me, we were still the calculational method. Where do you measure your flux?
Yeah, it should be not too close and not too far, but I must.
Do you measure it after the pulse or during the pulse?
During.
But that's dangerous. I would believe, mm-hmm. Because it goes back and forth, and you will have interference in principle, mm-hmm. And with you may lose it with your interval.
Well, because alpha naught is very big. The excursion parameter of the electrons.
What's the difference?
Oscillation. Motion.
It's a very short pulse. No, probably you are right. I was not prepared here to give that this is 3 years ago I've done this. Now you are right, probably it's short pulse, so I close and next. I calculate this flux after closing.
Okay,
but because it's in four cycles, so no, of course.
Anyway,
but I really. I didn't think I would be talking ever about so old stuff. It's 3 years. Usually I'm talking about new research. Yeah, you are right. So of course. No, you are right. I integrate it after. It's very short pulse. even if the pulse is closed, nothing has come to this to my boundary, so automatically it's but also, you know, in this one slide I show, because we wonder with Apolonsky or your colleague also from Vienna, well, he asked question whether it's not accident resonance. So I tried many wavelengths. It persists for, it's not terribly as asymmetry as functional wavelength. So it's not an accidental resonance I see. It's the asymmetry now is functional, but now my motivation was to have some experimental method for measurement of the carrier envelope phase, and really what is interesting that in such a range of intensities, the asymmetry as function of phase is really like seems a very regular function with zeros really in quite same position up to exactly Keldysh regime when suddenly it's less regular. But this is already probably depletion. This regularity is probably related to depletion already of the initial state considerable. And even we go to over barrier at highest intensities already over barrier, not Keldysh regime. It's quite different behavior than so regular in this. So this range is interesting for experiment in which that experiment would produce such curves and should be compared with numerical calculation to even exactly calibrate this. This way one could calibrate.
Did you try to change your atomic potential and this remains universal?
I just shown already helium. Oh, this is helium. No, it's even... This is for helium, it's very similar. And it repeats, yes, but this P 0.3 pi is very, very interesting why it occurs, and it occurs for also for different atoms. And
how many angular momenta is your calculation? Mm.
Depending on intensity, but about 80, 50, over 50.
50 is okay.
Yeah, 50 for this intensity. Over 50, okay.
You know that if you are using velocity gates,
you need much less.
Much less.
Now you do that.
It wasn't.
Why?
Sir?
Why? Why do you need so many less?
Because
R is big.
But I think also it depends on frequency. My feeling is that velocity gauge is much better for higher frequencies than for lower.
It's
also frequency comes into consideration.
It's a question of economic momentum.
Smaller than momentum. No, I'm not finished, but I'm finished. So for longer pulses, the symmetry disappears. Ah, no, maybe not just one slide. I will return to this one already. Wilhelm has shown maybe this is the most important. I will finish with this. So he showed again this, but this is with Coulomb attraction. This is my kind of Monte Carlo model, which you don't like. You just mentioned that people are doing it. It's exactly this. After tunneling, I assume some probability distribution of after tunneling, I put some transverse velocity according to also theory from tunneling theory, from work of Thomas Brabet and other transverse velocity. So I didn't put exactly zero velocity, but zero parallel velocity, but I put transverse, and I did classical calculation after tunneling of 1,000 trajectories. And computed how many they come down to this right detector, left detector, and weighed them. At each T0, at each tunneling time, I weigh this by tunneling probability. And this gives this P-cert exactly as quantum, because again, this here is compared with quantum calculation. So that's a nice discrete calculation, which probably is not so justifiable, but gives correct this zero point, correct compared to quantum calculation. Time dependent Schrödinger equation is this. And this, but I did even two kinds of classical calculation using either standard formula for tunneling in DC field or improved by Misha Ivanov and Gennady Yudin, including some non-adiabatic effects. Which by changing this weighing, I am closer to quantum result. So indeed I should stop here.
Do we have time?